Join Adel Kozilski and Feige Stern as they explore ways to reverse chronic illness and achieve vibrant health. Your health is your only wealth, and together we can be better. Hashtag healthy you, wealthy you.
It's a beautiful sunny morning in Johannesburg, South Africa, even though the last few days felt like we were sitting in the middle of London, I do say. Don't you agree, Feige?
No, actually, I wasn't here, so...
Okay, that's why you've got such a broad smile on your face.
It didn't feel like I was in London.
Well, it felt like London the last few days. Really, really dreary. The sun is out. I'm excited. Welcome to the Healthy You Wealthy Show. Welcome to all our listeners. As always, we try to bring innovative thinking, different ways for you to think about your health. And we're super excited to invite back onto our show Richard Sutton. Richard Sutton is an international advisor on leadership, resilience, and human performance. He's the founder of The Performance Code and director of Sutton Health. He works with listed companies, executive teams, and entrepreneurs to build resilience and performance in demanding environments. He has led performance strategies for winning Olympic teams, advised former world number one tennis players, Olympic champions, and Springbok rugby captains. And of course, he's also lectured in postgraduate health sciences for the last 15 years. He is a best-selling author of Stress Proof, The Stress Code, Thrive, and very recently now, Shift Happens, just actually apparently came out some 10 days ago. Richard also has pioneered the world's first genetic panel for sustainable performance and has created the Stress Code app to measure resilience in business. A warm welcome to Chai FM, Richard.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
Well, you've walked a very, very long road. And I think the last time when you came on, you've actually come on a few times. We've spoken about children and you know, all the different things that we should be looking at when we are raising our children. And we've also spoken about the Stress Code. Tell us what's happened since then to now, the fact that you've written a new book called Shift Happens. What happened in your life? What shifted?
What's happened in my life? I've got a lot more gray. That's what's happened in my life.
I was going to say less stress.
Maybe I'd say a little bit less stress. Yeah. I mean, a couple of years ago, I moved to Cape Town, and it's been such a great move. Really love the environment. Been involved in many different projects. There's been a lot of growth. There's been a lot of insights. It's been a very positive period, but positive doesn't necessarily mean easy. Still, you know, with any growth, there's pressure. With any pressure, there's strain. With any strain, there comes a cost which needs to be managed and mitigated. And I guess in many respects, that's the genesis of the new book, Shift Happens.
Okay, so this is what we are going to talk about, and we really invite and encourage you to join the conversation. You can ask a question to our guest on 34519. That is our SMS line, or 061-895-1019 is our Telegram number. So let's build the basis. I've got like lots of questions. I know that we had a bit of a preamble before, and I'd actually like to bring some of what we were discussing, you know, back into the public forum. But what is the basis of Shift Happens? What caused you to write a new book? What angle are you looking at?
So this particular book is fundamentally a hero's journey, we being the hero. And it's the path we walk when life demands change. We cannot carry on as is. And it's not to say that we're not busy. It's not to say that we're not successful, but so often we find ourselves disconnected. And think about yourself when you were 12 years old or 15 years old, and you had these hopes and dreams and aspirations, and you kind of look at your life at 38 or 48 and you think like, what happened? You know, where did I get lost? And it's about finding ourselves again. More than anything, it's about finding ourselves again. And you know, sometimes there's difficult moments that kind of call us to adventure. So it could be burnout, it could be crisis, it could simply mean that, or could be a feeling that we just need change and we're stuck, and the life that we have right now is not the life that we aspire to. But there's always a catalyst. There's always something that says, okay, well, things are going to have to change. But the problem is that we understand that things need to change, or we've got a catalyst, a burnout, a loss, some sort of pain, a shift in careers. But it's still very scary. It's still very difficult. We want to stay safe. It's our... ingrained nature to not venture out and to keep things as they are. But there's this pull, and the pull is strong. So we kind of want to move into that, in that new realm of our life or new chapter of our life more than anything else. And eventually we have the courage to do it. And, but the courage, that's where the book comes in. It, it provides a mentor in terms of science and awareness or simple daily rituals that will help you rewire the stresses and the challenges and help you build strength so that you're able to go on this journey. And, you know, once you've got the commitments and you've got the game plan, so to speak, and you commit to this process, it's an exhilarating feeling knowing that you're going, moving out of your comfort zone, and you're going to pursue the things that you've dreamt of, and you're going to take the risk, and you're going to be courageous. But just by doing so doesn't mean that it's not going to be easy, or it's going to be easy. It's still going to be very challenging. You're going to have struggles. You're going to have setbacks. And it's the ordeal itself. It's the fact that we want to change. We're going to commit to change. We've got a template for change. We're going to venture into the unknown. And in the unknown, ultimately, we face these challenges, but we face these challenges with more resources and better equipped to handle these challenges. And the resources ultimately culminate in more clarity in our lives, and more calm in our lives, and more renewed purpose and renewed strength in our lives. And where we land up is not necessarily a different space or a different job or a different reality. We land up transformed. We might be in the same place, but we are stronger, we're more grounded, and we're more ready to shift those around us, whether it's our kids, or whether our partners, or whether our community, or something broader. So really, I guess in a nutshell, it's about becoming who you really are, and it's the templates that centers just on you. It's not about my stories and about other people's stories, but I use that as part of the motivational narrative. If they can do it, we can do it.
But I think it's important, as you're talking, you know, I had a very interesting experience about a month ago. We decided to go away, my husband and I, with our kids. All our kids are married. We told all the kids to leave their spouses and the grandkids behind, and we went away to the coast for a weekend. It was a very, very interesting, insightful experience, because as you were speaking, is that you get so lost in stress. You know, like for me, I did feel like I was 12 or 18 and then maybe 30 and then suddenly whatever. Like I was a mother. I raised them all, you know, got them their driver's license, their matrix, their wisdom teeth out, got them married. And like, what happened? And like, one of the things that I was thinking about was that perhaps like I needed to be more conscious during all the trials and tribulations of raising a family, of, you know, trying to put food on the table, doing whatever it is, being engaged with life, to be, I regret not being as conscious to allow myself to shift. Like I kind of like was in stress mode, meaning I don't even, the word stress mode is, but like engaged mode, that just, I had to survive every day. Just get on with what you have to do and just move and move and move and move. And now I go, oh my gosh, what happened? Like, could I have asked better questions? Like what wisdom now can I impart to the younger generation to actually stop? Because I can see them doing the same thing as me.
And to that point, I think, you know, we so often see surviving as the ultimate experience of success. And I don't feel, I think that's just part of the journey. I think the ultimate experience of success is continued growth, mm-hmm. continued personal development, continued development in community, continued development in pursuit of excellence, continued development in shifting others, continued development in terms of social change. And as you well mentioned, you know, I've got three young kids, difficult jobs. My wife travels, I travel. And you can get lost unless you're deliberate, unless you're conscious about not getting lost. What do you want? Who do you want to be? What is standing in your way? And just recalibrate and reconnecting to those themes. So that the we feel, you know, we're going back to Viktor Frankl here, ultimately. And that's the golden thread moment is, you know, what is our purpose? What is our meaning?
Okay, we're speaking to Richard Sutton, and we'd really love you to join the conversation. 34519 is our SMS line, 061-895-1019, our Telegram number.
This is the Healthy You, Wealthy You show with Adel Kosilski and Feige Stern.
We're talking to Richard Sutton about his new book, Shift Happens. Richard, we know that you take neuroscience and you take behavioral science and you make it real. and you give stories around it. And we just spoke before the break that you need to be conscious of the fact that you want to change. My question to you now is, change is hard. Like, how do we stick to it? You know, everybody on the 1st of January goes, I promise I'm going to be going to the gym. I'm going to eat more healthy. I'm going to do that in about a week, if we're lucky. We're back to our old habits. So,
but I think, Adel, as you say, we're scared of that change, but really that fear is what drives us.
So, it's, you know, what you're saying is so, so relevant, because we have these moments where we don't want to continue. We don't want the same year that we had this year. We want to start fresh, and we commit to these new behaviors and these new habits. And the interesting thing about neurochemistry and habit formation is that it follows a very specific thread. So if you're able to raise the molecule dopamine, so you have a high protein breakfast, or you take a supplement tyrosine, or you take, you know, certain other supplements that can elevate dopamine, it's easier to entrench a new behavior or new habit. So for the first 10 days of this new exercise routine or this new diet plan, as long as your dopamine is elevated, you can keep going. And then what you find is that you can be elevating dopamine, but nothing's working. It doesn't keep going. And now you've got to kind of shift your focus. And the focus you need to shift to is making it's kind of very relatable and providing cues all around. So in this particular instance, you kind of have little notes on the fridge: go work out, don't eat anything, or you know, don't buy the wrong food. Don't make it easy for yourself. For the next 20 or so days, you need to elevate the dopamine, and you also have to make anything that you've taken on really, really easy. If it's a 1 hour drive to the gym, you're not going to go. Rather go for a walk, or rather do something at home. It's not going to work. If it's very difficult to get healthy foods, you're not going to take it on. If it's very expensive to get supplements, you're not going to do it. You've got to make the next 20 or so days very, very easy. So kind of that's the next thread. And then what you're looking at is the extended period. Even if it's easy, it's not necessarily something that you're going to take on. So I've got the dopamine, I've got the motivation in a sense. It's relatively easy. It doesn't mean I'm going to continue. And now what you have to do is start planting cues everywhere. It's just reminders on your PC and on the fridge and on your, when you on your phone, and just this is why you're doing it. This is why it's important. And you've got to get through the next 10, 15, 20 days. And if you can make it with those three prompts, making it easy, little cues, getting the dopamine elevated, you can get through to about 60 days to 2 months or thereabouts. The habits that you're trying to form, or the habits you're trying to create, or the behavior you're trying to install, and then they start becoming your identity. This is what I do. I get up in the morning. I get some early morning sunlight. I go for a walk. This is what I do. These are the foods that I eat. And once it becomes your identity, then it's entrenched. It's you. And you can continue. So that, let's say that habit formation, there's a lot of theories. It's 21 days. The reality is that most of the research in terms of reviews and meta-analyses are saying that it's around 60, 65 days to entrench this new ritual, behavior, habit, whatever you want to call it, where it starts becoming who you are and part of your identity. And that's, I think, the real crux of this conversation is we want to take on new things, we want to be something different. The first thing we have to ask ourselves is this question. This question is, who do I want to become?
Richard, isn't the secret not to become? Who do you want to become? So the question is then, is dopamine not really actually the secret? Because before the show, we were discussing being on holiday, being in nature, you know, dopamine hits. You know, we're all so pumped by that when we come back from holiday, but maybe we're actually pumped with dopamine. Maybe we really just have that desire to do better, to be better, to do all that change, mostly because we have that dopamine hit. Is it not then that we need to kind of keep that dopamine happening throughout the year? You know, we come back to Johannesburg and it's like crash. You know, come back to the stress, come back to no nature, come back to, like, as Adel says, the treadmill. You know, the treadmill and the craziness.
Yeah, so you know, I don't think one can create a molecular bias in perpetuity. So the dopamine is useful. Dopamine drives motivation, it drives focus, it drives attention. It's not a be-all and end-all, but certainly it's part of a set that's very important to get us moving. It's about the external world. That's what dopamine does. It helps calibrate us to the external world. When we're stressed, our dopamine levels crash. So it's understandable why high demands and long hours and insecurities and lack of support, and they can all have a very negative impact on our motivation, drive, and focus. But you know, going back to the thread, like the golden thread that links it all, it's ultimately, if you ask anyone the one question, they will arrive at the same place. And if I ask you or ask Adel or ask anyone, what do you want for your life? Eventually, you're going to circle or kind of land on one point, and that is happiness. You're going to land on happiness. What do we want? We want fulfillment and happiness. That's what we want. Sometimes we don't know how to define it. And there's many different theories on happiness. And I don't think one theory alone gives us the answer, but Viktor Frankl's whole thesis was that we cannot feel happiness or fulfillment without growth, without purpose. So if we are personally growing, we feel fulfilled and happy. If we have purpose and meaning, we feel fulfilled and happy. And that's kind of where we start linking this back, is that for me to feel fulfilled, I need to know who do I want to become, because the habits and behaviors that I take on will align to who I want to become. In the next year, do I want to become, you know, kind of more competent, more capable? Do I want to become more successful? Do I want to be a better family member? Do I want to be more attentive to my children? Do I want to become calmer, more composed? Who do I want to become? That's the central point. And then from there, the next question arises. And the next question is, who do I want to become? But ultimately, what do I want for my life? And you can't think 5 years ahead. The world's moving too quick. What you want for your life is really something that's around 12 months ahead. What do I want for the next 12 months? Who do I want to become? And just kind of circle back on these questions. We never take the time for these questions.
Yeah.
And then once you understand this, there's two more questions. And the third question is, if I want to become this person, if I want this for my life, what's going to have to change? And that's a difficult one. And it's, you know, there's no need to write down 50 points. It's three or two things that you need. What's going to have to change? I might have to get up a little bit earlier. I might need a little bit more discipline. I might need a little more commitment. I might need a little less emotional volatility. What's going to have to change? But I think it really boils down to the fourth question. And the fourth question we need to ask ourselves is, what am I willing to fight for? Like, how important is this to me at the end of the day? And if you can find this clarity fuels action. If we know exactly where we're going, who we want to be, what we need to fight for, what's going to have to change, you have clarity. Clarity fuels action. Action drives momentum. All success is based on momentum. So momentum will create the transformation you're looking for. So you can have these dreams, but dreams without action remain dreams, nothing more. But once you have a base level of clarity, you open yourself to a whole different reality, a whole reality of positive change.
You mentioned before, and I'd like to touch on a few words that you actually dropped before the show, just some of the chapters in your book. Let's first talk about, you say you have a chapter on nature, and this is one of the things we were discussing before, of how different we are when we're, you know, living by the coast. I was trying to explain it. Maybe share with the listeners some of the ideas, and just to give the listeners a bit of background, I was telling Richard that when I'm sitting by the coast, even though I'm working just as hard, the same amount of hours, engaged in the same things I do, I'm doing them with a different framework, just simply because I'm by the beach. Maybe it's, I was asking, is it the walk in the morning on the beach, or is it the fact that, you know, I'm smelling the sea air? And you actually had some fascinating ideas around it. Let's just unpack that a little bit.
You know, so we think that the top therapies or the top interventions for managing stress and improving sleep and improving our cognitive capacity and sense of overwhelm, we assume that it's all in the pharmacological space or something like heavy in the neuroscience space. But the reality is that we've got the most remarkable template, and that's the natural world. And my first understanding of how the natural world impacts performance and impacts one's ability to cope with pressure was, one of my former clients was Maria Sharapova, and I spent a lot of time with her. Her life was very demanding. She had the expectations in the sport itself, and everyone wanted to dethrone her. I mean, she spent a long time at world number one. So she had the sports demands, she had media demands, she had started new businesses. The world was pulling her in 15 to 20 different directions, but the throttle was turned up full. I actually never knew how she could handle the pressure she did. And whenever things got a little bit much, all she would do is say, I'll see you in an hour. And she would, I used to spend a lot, I used to live at her house, and And she would kind of go for a walk, and she'd go either into the hills in California, or she'd go to the beach, and she'd come back an hour later and she'd be completely recalibrated. And it was a behavior that she kept from when she was a kid. She used to walk kind of streets that were lined with trees, and it was always the ultimate calibrator. And when you kind of look at nature and you look at the science of nature, the science of nature actually goes back to about 1982 in Japan, where the country introduced the ultimate formula for handling mental and emotional challenges. And that was to put people in a forest. It's called Shirin-yuku. That's the term. And what they
would
do is
kicking them out of the house and say, go get yourself lost in the forest.
Yeah, you're not feeling great. We want you to go to a forest. And they dedicated 62 forests for this practice. And there was a particular professor at one of the universities who was an expert on it. And he found that brief moments in natural surroundings completely recalibrate us, 100%. So there's been a lot of research in the space and kind of looking at what's happening. And what they found, this is crazy, is that if I've had a difficult day and I think, I live in Houghton, or I live in Oakland, or I live in Waverly, or I live in one of those suburbs where the streets are tree lined, and I'm going to go for a walk. Just that thought process, I'm going to go for a walk, or I'm going to sit outside in my beautiful garden, or someone else's beautiful garden, or my complex's beautiful garden. I'm going to start. That thought will lower stress hormones by 8%.
Wow.
8% lower cortisol. Just the thought. So now what you kind of do is you move from the thought to the action, and you go outside and say, look, I've only got 15 to 30 minutes, and I'm just going to sit outside, or I might go for a walk. It doesn't matter what you do. If you're out in that environment, what happens is around a 14, 15% reduction in cortisol in 15 to 30 minutes. That's mad. Very few medications can do that. And then what they found is that if you decide that, okay, well, you know, it's a Sunday morning, I just need to get out. You know, it's been a very hard week. I've got a hard week coming. I'm just going to go out somewhere into like a botanical garden, and you spend 3 hours there. Every stress marker will disappear in 3 hours.
So see, that's when you've got to go take your blood tests right after you finish the
blood pressure. That's when you do the discovery assessment.
Your blood pressure. Yeah. Richard, before the show, we were discussing about eye movement and nature as well.
Yes.
Like, I guess also the concept of EMDR and eye movements is pretty interesting.
No, it's incredible. So there's a couple of mechanisms. I mean, I can go on the numbers for days. But it was always wondered, like, why? Like, why is nature so profound in its impact on our health and well-being? It's not just the fact that it reduces stress levels and anxiety and overwhelm and shifts depression. It also makes us feel very energized. In a natural environment, for an hour or so, you're 50% more energized. If you're feeling depleted, get into nature. Something's going to happen. So research was looking at what is the mechanism. Like, is it just getting away from things? Is it the quietness? Is it stillness? And maybe that helps, less sensory input. But the reality that was discovered was kind of centering around the eyes. So when we look at an iPad, we look at our phone, we look at a computer, we look at a TV, we look at a document, we look at another person, our focus of attention is very narrow. And the narrower our focus of attention, the more it elevates our stress axis in our nervous system. So it revs us up. Anything that's narrow revs it up. And you look at, you know, you start the morning, you check your phone, you kind of, the next thing, you check your computer, you check your mail, you check, like, everything is narrow. You on the road, it's a narrow focus of attention. And what they discovered was while the narrow elevates our stress responses and increases our kind of nervous system activation, the wide apertures, the minute we go into nature, we start looking around us, we start looking in the distance, our aperture starts becoming broad. And that in itself starts recalibrating everything in these timeframes that I've discussed. So now researchers are saying, okay, that's certainly one mechanism. And in Shift Happens, I go through like all the detail in terms of like how this is happening and how to use it to your advantage. But there was something else that was very interesting that unfolded, in that the greener the environment, the better the response. So like research saying, like, why? Well, you know, is it certain types of trees? And what they discovered was trees emit certain chemicals. And like, they're not detectable by us. But when exposed to these chemicals, it actually alters our stress responses and alters our biology. And different trees have different effects. And it's quite a remarkable thing. And I go into a little bit of the detail in some of the studies on this, which are insane, by the way, like incredible. But there was something else about trees that for me really like hit a chord. It was this kind of light that went on. So what they found was that the leaves of trees refract light, specifically infrared light. So you go into a forest and you put on infrared goggles or infrared glass, and you just see that it's illuminated. It is so bright because of the infrared. So what almost is happening is you're getting this infrared bath in a green environment, in a forest environment. And the infrared light penetrates and it goes right through your clothes, right through your skin, right through like all your tissues. And it starts stimulating mitochondria, little energy cells in our muscles. And that stimulation, whether it's activating new mitochondria to form or just enhancing existing mitochondria, then shifts our entire like chemistry and our entire biology in a very positive way. And possibly this is why we feel more energized. And these are just three mechanisms that I've discussed. I have no doubt there are more that we don't understand.
But I'm sure the beach and the sea also is something like, I sit sometimes like on the beach and I watch people, you know, and it's just, it's strange, but wonderful to see how it calls to people. Like you'll see people just sitting there staring or just being in a place of like peace, you know, it like kind of like engenders a much more positive environment than if, for example, you decide to go out for lunch at a busy restaurant in Johannesburg. You know what I'm saying? It's like a completely different vibe.
Totally different. And you know, the interesting, there was a 2023 meta-analysis, 3,500 people in the analysis, and mostly were very young, around 18 or younger. Can you believe that? Like, and what they found was that an hour in an environment, like getting onto a beach, if you have the luxury of, you know, in Cape Town, we've got beaches. But you spend an hour in that environment, there's a 16% reduction in cortisol. If you were depressed or you were down, it's a 67% reduction in a depressive system. If you were anxious, an 84% reduction in anxiety. Energy levels go through the roof. So like these environments are extremely powerful. And if we are going on this journey, we are going, you say that I can't, you know, there's pressure of exams and there's pressure of work expectations. And I don't want the same year as I had this year. I want a different year. I want the pressure not going away. It's actually going to get harder. The world's going to get harder. We know that. But I want to cope better. And I want to be a better person. I want to be a better version of myself. And I want to pursue goals that I've put to the side. Nature is going to be one of the vehicles that's going to help you arrive in that place.
Is that why tennis is such a good game to play, with the eye movement, being outdoors and in the sun?
Are you saying tennis? Talk, say paddle.
No, tennis, whatever. Tennis, pickleball.
I spent 20 years in professional tennis. I love playing tennis myself. And there's something about, so tennis is interesting because you've got the outdoor environment, and depending where you play, it might be in a natural. I mean, I've got a club that's right in Camps Bay, right on the sea. And then there's another club that's right on the mountain in Fresno. So you've got these like these spectacular environments that you placed in. And then you kind of have the eyes trying to integrate with the physical movements. And that in itself is very stimulating, very, very good for the cerebellum. So it really helps cognitive aspects of our development and our continued development. But then also tennis is almost like a chess match. It's you're kind of trying to calculate, you're trying to outmaneuver, you're thinking strategically. So it's helping you think, it's giving you the physical integration, you've got the nature, you've got all the set. Very few things make me happier than tennis. And even if I lose, and I lose more often than I win. So it's a great game.
Hey, we'd like to know your opinion. Do you resonate with what Richard is saying? I certainly am. Would love to know your feedback. Do you have a different experience when you leave, you know, the craziness of Joburg living and go even out for a hike out of the city, or you go down to the coast, or you know, you go into nature? Do you find that it changes? We'd love to hear from you. 34519 is our SMS line. 061-895-1019 is our Telegram number. This is the Healthy You, Wealthy You show, and this is 101.9 High FM.
This is the Healthy You, Wealthy You show with Adel Kasilski and Faggy Stern.
We're talking to Richard Sutton, and we're talking about how to shift and how to move and how to be motivated forward. One of the other things that you mentioned just before the show, that you have a chapter on breath work. I'm fascinated. Share us some tidbits.
Well, I'll give you a bit of a back end. Is someone I've spent a lot of time with throughout my career was Novak Djokovic. And Novak, I met him around 2005, and I was sitting in the Players Lounge at the US Open, and in comes Novak and his team. He's 18 years old, and they sit down. The team is celebrating. It's all really exciting. He's just at ranked 97 in the world. He's beaten someone who's 31, a guy called Gael Monfils, and the team believes that this is part of his journey to world number one. And he's very clear on his intention. He wants to be the best tennis player in the world, not the third best, not the fourth best, the best. So like it was, and I spent a lot of time with the team that year, and he was so charismatic, he was so funny, but he struggled in a couple of areas. His composure, very emotionally vulnerable, very emotionally reactive. Believe it or not, Novak Djokovic, of all people. But his humor would compensate. He could have a crowd in hysterics. So kind of fast forward 1 year later, I'm sitting in the Players Lounge, and in walks Novak. And Novak's 16 in the world. I mean, you're 19 years old. You've gone from 97 to 16 in 12 months. That's growth. Most of us can't hope for something like that. Fast forward 1 year later, I'm sitting in the Players Lounge, same chair. We always seem to migrate to the same chairs. And in comes Novak and his team, and Novak's 3 in the world. In 2 years, he's gone from 97 to 3. That's amazing. And the team, their belief that he's going to be number one, it's starting to like make sense to everyone. So a year later, I'm sitting in the Players Lounge, in walks Novak. Novak's number 3. A year later, same chair, same lounge, Novak's number 3. A year later, same chair, same lounge, Novak's number 3. Same chair, same lounge, year later, Novak's number 3. To the extent where he feels like he's going to give up tennis, it just, he does not know how he can continue. The goal was number 1. It was to show that Serbians could be great at anything they pursued. And for 6 months, he removes himself from the game. His wife says, are you mad? Have you seen our expenses? You go back, you play. So his wife gets it back. And you know, this is one of, you know, you asked earlier, you know, kind of, you know, about transformation. And it's, he kind of relooks, and yes, he was going through emotion. I mean, to be 3 in the world, I mean, that's extraordinary. You know, there's hundreds of countries that contribute to the tennis pool. And that in itself is off the charts. And for him, it wasn't his goal. His goal is to show that Serbia can do something extraordinary. And he kind of looks at who he was, and he was a very funny guy who would entertain crowds. And he looks at his emotional composure, which was volatile. And he said, if I'm going to go forward, I've got to change. And that's that big decision that we sometimes have to make. And he then gets a guide, so to speak. And the guide is a functional medicine practitioner, gets some psychologists, and he kind of just looks at everything. And in order to be number one, who's he going to have to become? What's his identity? He's got to be more serious. He's got to be more composed. His endurance got to improve. So he identifies key areas of growth. And he sets about this course. He changes his diet. But the number one thing that he takes on is conscious breathing, because he knows that in order to change his behaviors, the volatilities and the explosive outbursts, he's going to have to change his state. And the big first piece in this journey was deliberate breathing in key moments. And specifically, it's called a cyclic sigh, where you inhale again, and you do a slow exhale. But and that particular breath action or breath technique can lower a sense of overwhelm immediately. Like immediately, you've got a 15.5% state change. And what happens is he starts applying this conscious breathing, and it's practiced, it's learned. He never applied it before. In the pressure situation, the first thing he does is pause, breathe, respond. Pause, breathe, respond. Sitting in the Players Lounge, 1 year later, he's world number one. And he stays there for 3,000 weeks.
Wow.
So the power of breath in terms of regulating us, it helps us be the person that we want to be. It gives us that moment of respite. It controls our biology so that we can move forward. It's not in itself, if I do breath, everything in my life will be fine. No, you still got to take on the behaviors, the right dialogues, the right conversations, the right attitudes, the right responses, but you need to create the states in order to achieve that.
A friend of mine just went on a retreat. And she said to me that the breathwork session was probably the most mind-altering session that they had on the retreat.
And when you say mind altering, you're 100% right, because you know those type of breath work sessions, they generally use a technique which is known as cyclic hyperventilation, some form of cyclic hyperventilation, which then alters CO2 levels in the brain. And as a consequence of these altered levels, all of a sudden you start having these kind of deeper, more meaningful experiences. So it's like there's this radical gaseous and chemical shift in the brain, which very effective and for many people, very transformative.
How long should a person do a breathwork session for every day?
So, the thing is, in the book, I've got two chapters on different breath practices. So one is in the moment. What do you, you have an exam and you need to perform. That's different from a scenario where you've got repeated demands over the course of a week. So we need to deal with these situations differently. Sometimes it's a hard conversation. Sometimes it's a tough social situation.
Yeah.
And the social situations are very complex because when we feel excluded or we feel rejected, that we experience the same pain as if we had some sort of physical assault. The same region of the brain processes that. So how do we calm ourselves in that moment? And that's the cyclic side, which in the book I describe kind of the mechanisms and the outcomes and Stanford and their research and kind of everything that relates to that. But essentially that's an inhale, another inhale, and an exhale. And you do that 3, 4, 5 times. In terms of a 5-minute breathwork session, it's the most effective. No meditation, nothing can compare to it. Like it's
the resetting of the vagus nerve. No,
Richard, it's fascinating what you said. Just like literally a few sentences back, it's the same at feeling as a physical assault. That is huge.
It's massive. Huge. If you go back to ancestral,
it's what people struggle with constantly. That is unspoken about. That is a huge statement.
It's massive. And from a chemical perspective, the opioid system kind of processes social rejection and pain. And certain regions of the brain, two regions of the brain, process both social rejection and physical pain. So it is the equivalent to. So we can't, when people are experiencing social challenges at school or social challenges in the workplace or social challenges in their community, don't underestimate how impactful it is. And there are some theorists that say that if you take a painkiller before a social experience that's going to be difficult, it actually mitigates and neutralizes much of that experience.
Interesting.
We're not promoting that. We are not promoting that, and we're going to go for an ad. We're going to stop that right now. We are speaking to Richard Sutton. This is 101.9 Chai FM.
This is the Healthy You, Wealthy You show with Adel Kosilski and Feige Stern.
We've been speaking to Richard Sutton around his book, Shift Happens. Richard, if listeners remember just one thing from Shift Happens, one thing they could start doing today to shift the trajectory of their life, what would it be?
The one thing, I feel that it's the realization. It's the realization that doesn't matter how old you are, where you are in life, you can still be or do anything. You just need time, you need effort, you need commitment. And you need to be courageous. And it's not abstract. It's not someone else's reality. It's my reality. It's many of the people in the book's reality. Some peaked late in life and some peaked early in life. But I think it's this belief that we're all extraordinary. And it's just to find that vehicle and find that opportunity to become who we are.
That's amazing. Just tell our listeners, where can we get your book?
Right now, it's available everywhere. So all the bookstores. I'm not going to list the bookstores, but it's everywhere. So it's been out for about 10, 12 days, just on shelves. And you can get it on Amazon, on Kindle or ebook. It'll I think an audiobook will come out a little bit later next year. It's still in its early phases. So it's pretty
exciting. Are you doing any book launches in Johannesburg?
No book launches this year.
He lives in Cape Town, Faggy. You have to go
book launches.
I know, but go to Cape Town, you'll find him. You'll find him by the beach.
We've got a book launch at exclusive on 20th of November at the waterfront in Cape Town. There's an online with the Daily Maverick. We're doing a launch with the Daily Maverick on the 19th of November at midday. So there's a lot of activity around it.
Well, as always, it's been fascinating chatting to you. And it's always just, you know, just having a conversation with somebody reminds you to recalibrate, reminds you to be conscious, reminds you that change is possible. And really, we thank you for your expertise.
It's a breath of fresh air.
Yeah, exactly. So thank you very much and much success with your new book.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me today and thanks for a great conversation.